You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now, a shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
On the program today, we've got the week, of course, and what happened. We've got some women's soccer, and then we've got some really boring conference calls from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today. This one is the 21st day of October. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Into it we will dig. The week that was, I mean, because 7 minutes goes by way faster than you think it's going to. Catherine Rampell is at the Washington Post. Lynette Lopez is at Business Insider. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
All right, Catherine, we're going to start with you. Lynette, you're going to get the same question, so you've got a little bit of an advantage here. But Catherine, you go first. I would like your assessment of the current economic vibe and your reasons, please.
Sure. I would say the economy is probably not in recession now. There are enough indicators suggesting continued expansion, but the outlook has darkened considerably. And it has become much more likely, at least than was the case a few months ago, that we will have a recession sometime in the next year. I don't think it's inevitable. So I don't want to like talk ourselves into a recession, but I do think that the situation has gotten riskier. I'll put it that way.
Okay, we're going to come back to that part. Lynette, same question. Go.
I feel like, you know, when you're on a roller coaster and your car pulls up up on top of a hill, pulls back, and the roller coaster is ready to let you loose and go upside down and all around and all create into some kind of swirly thing. That's kind of how our economy feels right now. We are preparing for a bit of a wild ride. There are various ideas across Wall Street about how deep a recession like this could be, how long it could last. Most analysts don't think it will last that long once it comes. This isn't going to be a 2008, but people do think it's coming and they are preparing for it.
Okay, but Catherine, back to your whole let's not talk ourselves into it. If I'm just the average person in this economy looking around, while inflation is still very high, yes, gas prices are coming down. I can get a new job if I want one. I am spending money still very much. Why do you believe a recession is coming, Catherine Rampell?
I don't think it's definitely coming. Yep, I think the risks have risen, maybe coming, because there are some warning signs that we've seen that the housing market is already in trouble. And you see people dumping junk rated securities from Fannie and Freddie because they're worried about mortgage defaults, for example. Global freight has been declining, depending on what metric you're looking at. You know, the ports are less congested than they were, suggesting that there's less demand for goods, for example. So there are things like that. And the bigger issue that's contributing to all of this, of course, is the fact that you have central banks around the world simultaneously tightening financial conditions. And the reason they're doing that, of course, is to get inflation under control, because the problem has been there's pretty strong demand, supply is constrained. So they're basically like cooling down demand a little bit, but they're all doing it at once. And there is a risk that they cool demand so much that we go into recession. So it's the combination of like these warning signs that we're already seeing some signs of distress and like where policy is headed.
Okay. So let's talk about that policy, Lynette. The Federal Reserve meets a week from Tuesday and Wednesday. The smart money is on another big interest rate increase, right? 0.75 percentage point. I wonder what you make of some of the chatter out there that says, you know what, they're going to go big now, 0.75 percentage point now, so that they can start slowing down and maybe do 0.5 percentage point and then 0.25 and kind of do a little tapery kind of thing, if I can mix my monetary policy metaphors.
You can absolutely mix them if you want to. Okay, so I think that what we have to do is just continue to pay attention to the Fed. Every time Wall Street has tried to say, you know, this is where the Fed is going, they're actually going to slow down. It's not going to be as bad as we thought. Actually, stocks rallied this week on the hopes that this whole rate rising policy would be more short-lived than analysts initially thought.
Right.
Every time we get optimistic like that, the Fed comes back.
We get smacked.
Powell's like, no, I am in charge. You don't tell me what to do. And the market goes kerplunk again. I think it's really important to just... Powell has not changed.
Yeah.
We're going to be data dependent, he said. We're going to be this and that. We're still not seeing inflation. We still aren't sure if we've seen a peak inflation.
Right.
We're still not sure if inflation has... We don't have it down to the rate we want it, that we're comfortable in this economy. And until we see that, I just don't see Powell slowing down. He has not told us that he has seen evidence that inflation has peaked yet.
Right. Okay. Catherine Rempel, new topic. And it's over in the UK where this is the part I want your thoughts on. It sure looks like the markets now have dominion over politics in the United Kingdom. And I wonder what you make of that.
You know, it reminds me a little bit of James Carville's, political strategist, his famous comment that he wanted to come back after death and get reincarnated as the bond market, because that's the most powerful thing there is.
Right.
That was what he said. And then you had like another political soothsayer, Dick Cheney, later on saying, deficits don't matter, you know, by which it means like markets no longer care about deficits. And that has been the case here for quite a long time. But the United States, despite running up very, very high debt, has the virtue of still printing the world's reserve currency, right? So like, even if normally you would think that bond markets here would demand higher interest rates when we keep adding on debt and don't have a plan for getting it down, it hasn't happened. That is not true in the UK, right? If British politicians say, oh, don't worry, we're going to grow our way out of debt by cutting taxes and also spending a lot of money on energy subsidies, the markets ain't buying that.
Right.
And so that's why you saw the pound plummeting. That's why you saw yields rising on UK sovereign debt.
Right.
So, you know, they're in a different situation than we are. It doesn't mean it couldn't happen here, but certainly the markets have been in charge recently.
Like I said, 7 minutes goes faster than you think it is, because I got like 3 more minutes of questions to ask you guys. Catherine Pell at The Washington Post, Lynette Lopez at Business Insider. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Guy.
All right, we're gone. Have a nice weekend. On Wall Street today, what? Traders worry? We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The United States is considering, and this is, we should say, according to reporting from Bloomberg, the United States is considering restrictions on the access that Chinese companies and their government can have to American-made emerging technologies. Think quantum computing and artificial intelligence software, those kinds of things. You might remember just a couple of weeks ago, the Biden administration significantly expanded the limits the Chinese can have to semiconductor technology as well. So we asked Marketplace's Sabri Benishor to go figure out what the goal might be here.
What has the administration concerned is the potential use of advanced technologies for military purposes. Xiaomeng Lu is with Eurasia Group.
For example, China has been developing hypersonic missiles, and it's very likely they have used U.S. chips.
Details are scant on what the administration is planning around quantum computing and artificial intelligence, but restricting China's access to those technologies is consistent with what it has done with advanced computer chips. That included limiting exports and preventing any U.S. citizen or green card holder anywhere from assisting China's development of that technology.
It is effective in the short term because of the ubiquity of U.S. software and tools and equipment.
Kevin Wolf is a partner at Akin Gump and worked on export controls under President Obama.
But the administration has been quite candid in saying that if the allies do not come on board with imposing similar controls, the effectiveness will decline.
Convincing allies will be a tall order, but potentially doable, he says. Limiting U.S. exports comes with costs to the U.S. Jacob Feldgoys is a data research analyst for the Center for Security and Emerging Technology at Georgetown.
The downside, as we've already seen, is that it will certainly harm to some extent the profits of U.S. companies.
Meanwhile, some observers express concern that requiring licenses for exporters, which the U.S. did with computer chips, isn't enough. Derek Scissors is at the American Enterprise Institute.
We need tighter controls than what we've had, and we're nowhere close to going too far.
When it comes to blocking China's access to quantum computing and artificial intelligence technology, the government is reportedly only in very early stages of drawing up a policy. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishor for Marketplace.
Women's soccer is about to take a big step toward next summer's World Cup in Australia and New Zealand. The tournament draw is tomorrow. Who plays who in the group stage? Women's soccer, if somehow you hadn't heard, is booming. This year's European Championship for the women drew something like 365 million viewers globally. That's more than twice as many as watched the 2017 edition. But according to the World Cup's organizing body, FIFA, broadcasters are lowballing their bids for the rights to air those games. And FIFA has told broadcasters this week they are going to have to pony up. Marketplace's Andy Euler has more on that.
FIFA asking broadcasters to pay more money for anything shouldn't surprise anyone, says Tom Bassum. He's news editor at SportsPro, a London-based sports media company. But he says this time feels different.
In this case, it feels a little bit like they're just trying to tell the market that now's the time that you've got to start paying for this stuff.
Fox has already paid for the broadcasting rights here in the U.S., but when it comes to TV rights in Italy, Germany, France, the U.K., and maybe even Spain, FIFA has rejected networks' initial offers and told them to increase their bids.
I've really seen a shift in how FIFA perceives the women's game.
Natalie Smith is an associate professor of sport management at East Tennessee State University.
And I think that has then shifted how they interact with outside entities.
She says it's now time for these outside entities, in this case broadcasters, to stop making excuses.
They always think the last tournament was a one-off. Like, oh, well, last time it was in France, so of course the numbers are going to be higher, so we're going to lowball you.
She says the popularity of the women's game just doesn't seem to have sunk in for broadcasters. And Michelle Janning, a sociology professor at Whitman College in Washington State, says network executives may well still be thinking like this.
This just isn't as interesting. Women's sports are not as interesting as men's sports. They're not the same kind of athlete. They don't draw the same crowds. And so pointing to those kinds of things as economic reasons might be an interesting justification in their minds.
Janning says societal changes take a long time to happen, and even longer for conservative institutions like TV networks to recognize. But FIFA pushing back on the value of the women's game could be a pivotal moment. In Austin, I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Coming up.
If there's a prescribed fire and it goes wrong, someone's in trouble.
I mean, that's fair, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 748 today, just under 2.5%, 31,082. The NASDAQ up 244 points, 2.3%. Finished at 10,859. The S&P 500 crept up 86 points, about 2.3%, 37.52. For the week, the Dow up 4.9%, NASDAQ up 5.2%, S&P 500 increased 4.7%. Snap, the parent company of Snapchat, saw shares plummet 28% after telling investors they were assuming zero revenue growth this quarter. That's a big no-no in capitalism. That news was a drag on Facebook, too. Meta, its parent company, of course, slid almost 1.2% today. Here's a number for you, $310,000. That's about how much it costs to raise a kid to the age of 17 these days. That's according to the latest Brookings Institution estimate. Also up more than 9% from 2020. Bonds rose just a bit. Yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 4.25%. Man, you go away for like 4 days? Bonds go crazy. You're listening to Marketplace. You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it impacts you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We've got a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and yes, the Kai PA glasses are back, but only while supplies last, and I'm taking some of them. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Whatever the actual chances of a recession are, and let me channel Catherine Rempel here. Whatever those odds are, a lot of people are keeping an eye on third quarter corporate profits. Wall Street analysts are listening to what companies are saying about rising costs and the labor market and sales and anything, really, that might tell us where things might be headed. To get the answers to those questions, though, you got to sit through a whole lot of dry corporate talk delivered in dull monotones. Because honestly, earnings calls, they're really boring by design, as Marketplace's Kristen Schwab reports.
If you've never listened in on some of these earnings calls, and let's be honest, why would you? They sound a little something like this.
Continue to show the agility and perseverance required.
There's evidence by accelerating adjusted EBITDA.
By strong performance on macro FICC business, which has benefited by...
Every quarter, public companies have to file reports with the Securities and Exchange Commission. And what happens after are these earnings calls for investors and analysts. They're not required, but they've become common practice in the last couple decades. Karen Woody is a law professor at Washington and Lee.
It is sometimes very... I don't want to say boring, but I think these are standardized seeming conversations.
Standardized because every word executives read on these calls is vetted.
Because these things do have with them the attendant risk that it is a statement made on behalf of the company. And so you have to parse your words fairly carefully.
The SEC weighs every word said on these calls. So if a company misleads investors on purpose or by accident, it can be held accountable, which is why the language used can feel so tired.
I would suggest that overused phrases like headwinds and tailwinds are a bit cliche.
Donatella Giacometti is president of CEO Media Coach, a company that trains C-suite executives at brands like Toyota, Pepsi, and GE. She says it's her job to take out some of the jargon and bring out a little personality from executives.
Wall Street, investors, analysts are assessing the competency of management. It's a little bit like, you know, intangible assets on the balance sheet, you know, that we might not be able to exactly put a number to it.
Except you kind of can in stock price. Studies show the language managers use can affect share value. This is especially true when executives get to the Q&A section of a call where there are no prepared statements. Anastasia Zakalukina, an accounting professor at the University of Chicago, says analysts pay close attention to word choices and vocal variations when the news sounds bad and even when it sounds good.
So if you see the extreme positivity on the call, maybe you should question how genuine this positivity is.
It's why the tone of these calls sits squarely in the mundane. But every once in a while, someone goes rogue, like Elon Musk during an infamous earnings call in 2018 when he cut off an analyst.
In terms of your capital next. Requirement?
Next. Boring, bonehead questions are not cool. Next.
Tesla's stock price tanked after the call because it made analysts pause and go, is Musk just a man with a lot of personality? Or, Zakalukina says, is he evading a question he doesn't have a good answer for?
So investors are reading into the skews.
Earnings calls should never be memorable. You communicate your wins, you explain your losses, and you get out. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
According to the National Interagency Fire Center, that's the federal agency that manages what's called wildland firefighting in this economy. According to them, as of this morning, there are 83 fires going, 10 uncontained large fires, and just over 3,500 people fighting them. Obviously, the best way to avoid those big damaging fires is to not have them. And one way that's done is by prescribed burning, setting controlled fires on purpose to burn up excess fuel. The U.S. Forest Service says 99.84% of those controlled burns go according to plan. But it is, of course, the other 0.16% that is the problem. In northern New Mexico, two burns set by the Forest Service merged last spring and became the largest wildfire in that state's history, which has prompted the federal government to revisit its prescribed burn protocols. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has that one for us.
The Calf Canyon Hermit's Peak fire destroyed Luis Trujillo's family cabin in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains. Then it started moving east.
So the fire was on the mountain ridge that you can see from this window. It was just about to creep into the city.
The city of Las Vegas, New Mexico, where Trujillo's the mayor and a social worker.
The hardest day was around May 2nd, when parts of the town had to start evacuating.
The fire damaged or destroyed hundreds of homes, businesses, and ranches deeper in the mountains, and a few structures on the outskirts of Las Vegas. It never did reach the inner city, but Trujillo says the fire then led to a water crisis. A few miles northwest of Las Vegas, the Gallinas River rushes over a diversion channel.
You want to go down there and see it?
Damian Maestas with the Public Works Department explains water is pumped from here to a treatment facility downstream and then to the reservoirs that supply the city's drinking water. But the Gallinas runs right through the burn scar left by the fire.
As you can see here, we got this netting here to catch the debris.
Like charred branches and vegetation. But the river is still cloudy with ash.
Our water treatment plant is only able to treat almost near perfect water. It was never designed for this kind of contaminants that are in the water now due to the burning.
Mayor Trujillo says the city of Las Vegas needs an entirely new water treatment system.
How do we replace, you know, $200 million of infrastructure?
He's been lobbying for the feds to help because, well, they started the fire.
To me, the insult is that it was man-caused.
The Forest Service says its main mistake was not updating burn models to account for drought conditions, and it's recommended some new, stricter rules for the future use of prescribed burns.
Even as the scientists that study forest ecology and fire science are saying, this is urgent. You know, it's urgent because we're going to lose communities.
Michael Wara is a lawyer with Stanford's Climate and Energy Policy Program. He says climate change makes prescribed burning trickier to get right, but also more necessary. Without it, Wara says we can only expect wildfires to get larger and more destructive. And there's another paradox here.
If there's a prescribed fire and it goes wrong, someone's in trouble.
In this case, the federal government, which is on the hook for billions in recovery costs.
But no one in the Forest Service gets in trouble when there's a wildfire that destroys communities and destroys a landscape. And the fire really occurs because of the lack of management of that landscape over decades.
So there's a penalty for preventative action that in rare cases can go awry, but no penalty for a failure to act.
We're stuck in a negative feedback loop.
Bill Tripp is natural resources director for the Kuruk tribe in California. He says the Forest Service is working under a backwards incentive structure.
In a major way, because if you're looking at everything from the perspective of what you may, on an outside chance, be liable for,
then you'll make choices that protect your bottom line rather than the health of the forest. Tripp and Wara agree more federal resources are needed for prescribed fire, not fewer. But that's a hard sell in northern New Mexico. Mayor Luis Trujillo expects it will take a decade for Las Vegas's water supply to recover. He says the rural mountain communities that burned will never be the same.
That's not right. It's just not right to say, well, you know, we're sorry, this was the 1.whatever% that got out of, I don't care about the other ones that have been controlled. I care about the one that got out of control.
After what happened here, it's hard for Trujillo to see any place for prescribed fire in forest management. In Las Vegas, New Mexico, I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out, today in which inflation hits Halloween. Saw this on Axios this morning. Candy price increases 2021 to 2022. Skittles up 42% year over year, which I just don't get because Skittles are way overrated. Starburst up 35%, also overrated. Snickers up 14%. Reese's, the best candy, up 13%. All right, we're out of here, but of course not without your moment of economic context. Just getting back to what Catherine and Lynette and I were talking about, the strength or maybe lack thereof of this economy. Well, I don't know how many times we've said it, a zillion perhaps, that consumers and our spending are basically everything. Here's a data point for you. American Express said today spending by its cardholders in the third quarter up 21% year over year. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday. Everybody, have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.